Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Amick.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not Roger Sun.
Everybody, we don't have to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. Sitting here in a very dank, depressed because we're on the visiting side, press conference room of the NBA Finals Game 5 with the one and only, Slater, don't get mad, I'm going east first because we have a new guest, Jay King, Celtics beat writer, the kid, and it's late at night, kid. And the hair is looking good, by the way. You're hanging in there better than the team you cover.
I appreciate you. You know, I often wear a hat, but sometimes you just got to let it flow.
I mean, between you and Anthony Slater, our Warriors beat writer, who is sitting also to my right. And by the way, to the listeners, this is always fun when we get to be together in person. This is three humans in the same room. But man, the Slater hair, the King hair.
It is crazy we're all in the same room. This never happens.
Oh yeah, no, I can't be on y'all's level.
I guess it's hair for the all 82.
Hell yeah, does it? It happens every night for the all 82, including we have an all 82 taping coming after
it is
this.
Coming. So Slater's
a double pod night for Slater.
Yeah, Slater's sure. Doing double duty. So we're saying about 82. This is about the March to 16, and the Warriors go down 2-1. Obviously, in Boston, and things are looking grim.
Stephen Curry walks out of the building. Like 10 feet away from us.
Is that right? Hey, Wardell, come join us.
If we can get him on the pod, that would just be a terrific cameo.
Amazing. Should I go chase him down?
I mean, if you really want to. I think he's about done with us tonight. He just did like 15 minutes, like really not that long ago. He does post-game presser so late. Which, by the way, it's 11:40 p.m. Is he really still here? Anyway.
That's kind of wild.
I'm sure it was him. I wouldn't be surprised because he's a post game.
No,
I would say two things. He's a post game lounger, number one. He takes a long time. He just kind of moves at his own pace post game. Also, he has a bunker suite here, family bunker suite. And those bunker suites, for anyone that owns them, like party don't stop when the buzzer hits. Like you can chill in there.
I'm going to pivot with that. They ain't partying yet. What I find so interesting about tonight, game five, Warriors win 104-94. Score, correct? Is that right?
Yes.
What I think is so interesting about these Warriors, and Jay, we'll get into the Celtics side. I wrote after game three that I thought Boston looked poised to actually win this thing, look like the better, more superior team. Now the Warriors come roaring back, win two in a row. Second time since mid-January, Boston's lost two in a row, first time in the playoffs.
Yeah, and the other time they lost two in a row, I believe one of those was when they sat their starters or didn't even bring their starters to Toronto. Okay.
I looked at the box.
Jaylen Brown did not attend the game.
Yeah, so this is a Celtics team that was looking, you know, very strong. I finally picked up on that. Nice job. But man, these Warriors, not only do they come back, take the 3-2 series lead, guys, but what I think is so interesting in terms of the context here, Klay Thompson and Steph and Draymond, they keep dropping these historical references to, you know, that when they go down 2-1, I think as the story goes, Klay says to Steph, oh, you know, Steph, it feels a lot like 2015.
He says that in his press conference, which I was surprised by. He's like, it's big 2015 vibes. And
yeah,
then, of course,
right.
You know, they're down 2-1, and you know how these swings of emotions go in the series where the internet just believes whoever won the last game is, like, guaranteed to win the series.
We do sometimes.
Yeah, well, yeah, we are among the internet thieves out there. But
quickly to finish the point, like, then – they go up 3-2, and instead of, to your point, partying in the bunker suite, you know, Klay and some of the other guys were quick to say, you know, we're not celebrating. And this now all of a sudden, it's got 2016 vibes. Like, you can't let go of the rope. you know, and Clay even kind of admitted that they maybe got ahead of themselves.
I feel like he was going to say they were like maybe overconfident, but then he said like overly eager. And I was like, I felt like he was about to be a little bit more honest than he ended up being, because I just didn't think he wanted to, I don't know, like say too much.
And think about that though. Like the Warriors can reference numerous finals when they had certain situations, and the Celtics are experiencing this all for the first time.
Right.
And I think you felt that in each of the last two fourth quarters. The Celtics, like their main problem all season, when they're bad early in the season, when they got good later on, is that their offense can go missing for long stretches of time. And they've just gotten discombobulated down the stretch when the Warriors are getting to what they want, are getting to what they need. And it does feel like just the wiser, more mature team has taken advantage these last couple of games, especially down the stretch. These were both winnable games for Boston. But
would you agree, Jay? This was the Celtics' first bad game. They felt like they were in control.
I remember two, they ended up losing by like 30, right? I mean, I don't remember what the final was. Maybe they came back.
Two was pretty bad. Two was pretty, but the first half of this game was really bad. Their offense was hideous. And then basically they played well for one quarter tonight, most of one quarter.
The third quarter,
which is not their normal quarter, at least in the playoffs. In the regular season, it was. But yeah, you can't really afford to be that up and down against Golden State. And what was crazy about the fourth quarter run for Golden State, it started, most of it was with Steph on the bench.
10-0 to start the fourth with Steph on the bench.
Yeah. And the Celtics made the decision
started the playoffs on the bench.
They made the decision to keep both Jalen and Jason Tatum on the court, even though each of them had played the whole third quarter. And I don't know whether that was the right call. Obviously, things kind of snowballed really quick, and I don't know whether it was fatigue or what. But if they had gone another way, gotten at least one of those guys a rest, brought them back and been sharper later in the game, who knows what would happen.
That is where you might be starting to see the wear and tear of these playoffs hitting Boston a little bit more than the Warriors. You saw it. I remember in the last series, by the middle to late of the conference finals, you had a lot of the Dallas people saying, Reggie Bullock looks gassed. Dorian Finney-Smith looks gassed. They just played a seven-game series against Phoenix. They're paying 43 minutes a night. Whereas and of course, as conditioned as Steph is, which you're kind of referencing there and the way he runs around the court. But beyond that, the Warriors have kind of coasted in the playoffs. They went up 3-0 on Denver, finished them in five. Memphis was their toughest series, and it was like six games with no Ja Morant for half of it. And then, they had three extra days of rest from Boston and only played a five game. They went 5-6-5, whereas Boston has gone 7-war with Milwaukee, 7-war with Miami, flew cross country for game one. The minutes are piling up. Robert Williams' knee is the guy's dragging one leg around the court and just the minute totals. If you just look at like total minutes in these playoffs, so many of these Boston guys are so much higher than a lot of the Warriors guys. And maybe that's part of it too.
And you wonder if it's sort of like a rookie wall thing too, where the Warriors prepare themselves to play this long a season. They're used to it, right? And you talk about Steph's conditioning. Like, he's been to the finals before. He knows what it takes to play for 100-plus games in a season.
Well, and pace in the regular season. We know this from the Warriors, right? They spend some of these regular season months like, yeah, let's think about May more than we're thinking about January, February.
So I know it's a little apples to oranges, but to that point, Jay, Dallas, when they lost to the Warriors, their kind of exit media interview messaging was all about, like, we just learned the hard way about the long view, about the playoff conditioning. Luka talked about Steph. Jason Kidd talked about the Warriors and what separates them from the pack. And it is a trip because, again, Boston looked like they were in control. And now they look somewhat shook. I think also it's interesting, Ime Udoka, I love how direct he is, not only privately with his group, but publicly in the media. But he says after game four, and I'm paraphrasing, that if we played offense the right way, we would be up at least 3-1. And his point, which was well taken, was that offensively, collectively, the Warriors, you know, all the way through the series have been around the same level. So they have a terrible game from Steph, 7 of 22 overall, 0 from 9 from 3, first playoff game ever that he hasn't hit a 3, breaks that streak of how many games?
233 consecutive games with one so made 3.
Yeah. With a 3.
Season.
Yeah. And, but off. So Ime's point kind of got flipped and thrown in his face, which is like, even with this kind of game with Steph, they still drop 104, which is about where they've been. And that, I think, speaks to what the Warriors have. It's not as much of a known commodity, certainly as the Durant Warriors. Those were, you know, you just knew one of those superstars was going to, you know, do their thing. But this group does have the firepower. You just don't always know who's going to show up.
And I thought it was all timely too, right? Like first quarter, they're getting off to the run and Wiggins hits a bunch of like tough mid-range shots over
the top. Durant shots. Those were the Durant shots from past playoffs.
Yeah.
At least Slater just said
Wiggins. Yeah, I think he just compared Wiggins to Durant.
I mean, Kevin if there ever was a night.
And then, you know, I thought – two of the biggest shots the whole game to me were Klay Thompson's threes near the end of the third quarter when the Celtics were taking control. I think they went up 4 and Klay hit a 3. Then they went up 5 and Klay hit another 3. And they were just huge shots to keep the Warriors attached when the Celtics were threatening to just kind of pull away with the game a little bit and get some separation. And knowing that obviously, the non-Steph minutes went pretty well for the Warriors. But knowing that he wasn't coming back at the start of the fourth quarter, it was those two shots from Klay were just enormous. And then Poole's three-pointer at the end of the third, obviously another big one. But I just thought Klay's shots were so timely.
Glass, by the way. We gotta start asking Jordan about Colin Glass.
Poole is just hilarious to me. Like,
really,
you know,
is.
He's
out there with his bright orange shoes.
He's now hit like these two bombs to end third quarters in this building. He's generally not had a good series.
He literally goes from being with the bench warmers, hyping the crowd with Juan Toscano-Anderson and Damian Lee and playing that role to his credit willingly. Like in terms of his vibe, he seems okay when he's sitting there waiting for Steve to call his number. Then Steve calls his number. And I understand, end of third quarter, do your thing. Shoot a 37-footer. He had that one, was it second quarter? 3 with 17 left on the clock.
I think it was actually in that same third quarter with, like, he tried to take the 2-for-1 where he, like, took the step back. It was, like, a complete air ball.
Step
it was like,
back, air ball. Then he gambles on defense. So you're basically 4-on-5. Then he fouls. Like, it was a trifecta. Like, the Jordan Poole experience on the negative side.
Oh, yeah.
But then he'll turn around. And then you look at the box and it's like, damn, 14 points in 14 minutes. Like that was part of, as Gary Payton II referenced and I wrote tonight, like this new generation strength in numbers thing where they pick Steph up.
Yeah. And I kind of want to go back to a little bit of our conversation we were talking about earlier because I wrote about what I think is kind of the most underrated unit within this series that is not getting talked about enough, the Warriors defense. You know, coming into the series, obviously we talked Boston defense against Warriors offense, and now you're talking about Ime's, you know, comments that are basically like, you know, like regardless of how we play Steph, they're going to end at 107, whatever. And like, it's all about how we play offense. I just don't think there's been enough conversation about how good the Warriors not only have been defensively in the series, but have been defensively this season. They were number one through a couple months. They were good in the playoffs. They finished number 2 behind Boston. They're the second best defense in basketball.
And that's with Draymond missing half the season.
Yes. Draymond misses half the season. And in this series, the 97 points, 94 points, and 3 times under 100. I know the Celtics have 3 of the 5 games, all 3 of their losses, they've been under 100. In the East playoffs, 20 games in the East playoffs, they only were under 100 2 times. So,
the Celtics have roughly, I'm close, roughly 6 points, 7 minutes in. It's kind of the inverse of, I think, game 4.
Yeah.
What I love, though, to your points later about the defense was they're kind of going for the neck defensively, and you know they're playing these lineups where if you can't play D, Steve is not putting you in the game. Jordan Poole doesn't see a minute until almost 10 minutes into the first quarter.
Jordan Poole's career couldn't take off the ground until finally it was like, learn how to box out, learn how to chip. You know, it's like, it has been the internal fight for three seasons.
So it's like Otto Porter, cool. You know, obviously Draymond, length, Andre Iguodala had an early couple of minutes. And Steve obviously was just leaning into the defensive side.
That's why you don't see the rookies.
Yeah. And so Luka Doncic in the Western Conference Finals had by far the worst shooting percentage he's ever had in a series against Golden State. Now Tatum's well on his way to joining Luka with his worst field goal percentage in a series. And to me, one of the most impressive things that they did, especially in Game 5, they made it so tough for the Celtics to get to the matchups they wanted. Like, they were so physical with at the point of attack that Tatum trying to get to Jordan Poole, Tatum trying to get to Steph, Tatum trying to get to those things. It was just like they made it really tough for the Celtics to set those screens and get those matchups. And by the time they did, they had run off a lot of clock. They were out of what they wanted to do. I'm super impressed by the Warriors' defense.
So, and this is kind of what I wrote about. I took kind of more zoom out, big picture. Like, you were going into training camp. Like, there was some skepticism within the Warriors about what they could be defensively. They were fifth last year, but it felt to a lot of people like somewhat of a fake fifth in a league, which that season had a lot of bloated numbers. They lost, I know it sounds crazy, but they lost some point of attack defense. They thought with Kelly Oubre and Kent Bazemore leaving, they prioritized. I know. Well, it sounds funny, but when you go back to training camp, you go back to the summer, the prioritization smartly by the front office was floor spacing, high IQ shooters, Bielitsa, Porter, and they used the picks on rookies who you know are not going to be, you know, the sharpest playoff defenders. And Draymond Green was among the people I talked to during training camp, was like, you know, what are we going to be defensively this season? There was some concern. But handing the defense over to Mike Brown turned out to be genius. I mean, he, like, you know, and I've written plenty about it, we all have, but some of the stuff he's done behind the scenes to amp up the accountability.
Is that like the Kings geniuses for hiring him?
We'll see, yeah. I guess. But
it's like the proxy champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they've not only, you know,
I think he's ready to make Sacramento a contender.
I got home playoff games?
Play in, maybe.
I would say that because
that's the big one. They just need one play in game and Gold One. Make sure that's a win.
To your point, real quick, to highlight the defense, we've gone this far into the pod and barely talked about Wiggins. So, first of all, not backhanded compliment, but like, he was incredible. Can we stop with the Finals MVP stuff?
Who is saying Finals MVP stuff?
It was Twitter, whatever.
So that's not happening. So anybody out there that's like, you know, the media is about to do it again. Like Steph Curry, if the Warriors win, he could go 0-25 in Game 6. If they win, he's probably going to win Finals.
Amick's the one who robbed Steph of a Finals MVP a few years ago.
So my fellow voter, I think I'm
– who's among the jurors.
Nothing but love for Steve Ashburner of NBA.com. But Steve, we might have shared a moment. This is going to sound awkward as we went into the men's room. And Ash walks in there, and I'm at the urinal.
Crossing streams talking about the Finals MVP.
And he literally, he's trolling big time.
Andre's been good in his few minutes in this series. No. What do you think?
So Ash, who voted for LeBron and who was hilarious, I've actually been meaning to write this. I'm just going to pot it, if you will. It's not a verb. But we have been sitting side by side on these media charter flights crossing the entire country. Steve Ashburner and I, like 6 hours together talking ball. And Ash voted for LeBron in 2015. I voted for Andre. We have been giving each other a hard time because we still both think we got it right. So walk into the men's room, and I thought this was well played by Ash. He walks in there and he says, "What do you think, Sam? Wiggins, MVP?" Like, no, the answer is no. He's averaging, I think, 17 points a game, playing decent, like playing good defense.
Good
defense, but no. Wiggins not MVP, but he's incredibly important.
Game 4 sealed it if the Warriors win for Steph Curry. Like,
He's been transcendent.
Game 4 is the series.
Well, and again, we keep bumping what we want. He does so much. And that whole team, like, they just need him out there. And I know they went on a 10-0 run when he was sitting.
Which, by the way, Boston kind of, like, you know, Ime, for all the talk about how much of a straight shooter he is, he spent the last couple of days saying they weren't changing it up. And then suddenly they were blitzing Steph more today. They were more aggressive when he was, like, Smart. I mean, like, this is what coaches should do.
He was trying to play chess. He was like, yeah, we don't need to change it up. Yeah. But meanwhile, he's planning to change it up the whole time. But
that's just to your point that, like, a lot of what the others eating tonight was like the Steph drew them out, like he, a lot of times
this
he does.
The best game of Wiggins' career, right?
He had a one again. Well, I mean, this was the most important game of Wiggins' career. I mean, like, I've seen, like, the one he had in Minnesota against Minnesota here this year was, like, an insane game from him. He's had the other candidate.
Curry is shooting like he's.
Yes. You know. I mean, he's only played before the season 5 playoff games. So, yes, to your point.
You know, Jared Vanderbilt earlier this year. I'm not sure the finals
game. Well, the other one I'd argue is the one in Dallas. Where he scored 20-something. He had a very similar game, and then he punctuated it with the dunk of the playoffs on Luka, which I'm sure you guys can remember.
Yeah, no.
Like, that was a similarly impactful game, and that was a road conference finals win.
I'm going to pick this one.
It's the rebounding on top. It was the shooting, the rebounding, the drive and dunk finish. It's like he's giving them everything that they need. It's not just a little bit of what they need. He's guarding Tatum. He's – what is he averaging, like? 13 or 14 rebounds over the last two games. He's
29 rebounds over the last two games.
He gave them secondary scoring today. And, like, possessions that were busted, he just finished at the end of them.
18-footer, Minnesota day. It's just getting your bag.
So I had a chat with Andrew yesterday at practice. I don't know him at all. It sounds funny because I'm based in the area kind of. And Draymond was on this podium that's, like, 10 feet from us. Andrew was waiting in the wing to go to the podium. Most guys who follow Draymond at the podium have to wait a while because Draymond, to his credit, because he might do the podcast, he might do his own thing. He also gives the media a lot of time.
He's a double podcaster too. Yeah. He does a press game, post-game press conference.
Well, so
Draymond Green, fan of speaking.
Remember the Q&A I did? Are you ever get tired of talking? What? Like, no, I don't. But Andrew's sitting there. And I shared a story with Andrew. I said, I don't know if you've listened to Draymond's pod, but he told a pretty rich anecdote on the pod about game 4. So Wiggins has 16 boards. In the locker room after the Warriors win, you got Ray Ritter, Warriors PR man, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Wiggins. I think that was the crowd. And Ray walks in and is congratulating Wiggins, says, hey, Andrew, you know, 16 boards, career high. Your previous career high, regular season or playoffs, was 11. Draymond, the way he tells it, says, I look at Steph. I can tell that he's thinking it, but he's Steph, so he won't say anything mean. So, of course, that means Draymond has to say it. He looks at Wiggins. He's like, Wiggs, man, like 16 boards. Nice job tonight, brother. But 11 was your career high? Like, that is weak. What the hell's wrong with you? You know, like, and you see this camaraderie that Andrew Wiggins – pause meant for emphasis, like Andrew Wiggins, the Minnesota Timberwolves, you know, like guy who never fulfilled those expectations, guy who people questioned in the Tibbs era, guy who people didn't think, you know, wanted to compete. And that's been, you know, we're seeing it right now. He's not leading a team, but he is incredibly important to this team.
His body language and confidence and energy on the court is like super notable. I mean, it just keeps increasing every level they get in these playoffs. He got back cut on a layup by Tatum today. You know, Tatum made the layup. It was like a defensive mistake by him. Ball goes through the net and he grabs it and he hits himself in the head a couple times with the ball. Like, God damn it, Andrew, like bad mistake. And I'm like, Minnesota would have loved to see that, right? You know, like, damn it, Andrew, I can't give that up.
I kind of hate, like, let's not do this thing where we try to do revisionist history and act like that was there, Minnesota. Like, it wasn't. I mean, I respect him, but his perspective, he had an interesting interview with Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, and I get it. You know, he just kind of tried to act like I've been this competitor all the way through. Like, you're number one pick. So I do sympathize with the pressure that comes with that, but – you know, he was rightfully questioned at that time, and he is now showing some moxie and some competitive fiber that we didn't always see.
Also, and I've seen some of this commentary online, I do agree with it. Like, you know, the organizations in this league and the environments that they cultivate play a big role. Like, some of like Wiggins' dullness is because of the Minnesota dullness and the lack of winning and the lack of detail and the lack of like just winning environment around him. I think the person, the two people that I, if I've ever talked to Wiggins about who he feels like impacted his career most and probably helped him leading into this Warriors experience. Kevin Garnett, he had like a year with, like late career Kevin Garnett. And Jimmy Butler, like he likes Jimmy Butler. Yeah. They're friendly, and Jimmy Butler likes him. This wasn't just a Draymond thing. Andre would always talk about it all year because Andre played with Jimmy in Miami and talked to Jimmy when he came over and was like, Jimmy was telling him, like, you're going to really like Andrew Wiggins. And I
liked some subtweeting, so to speak, of Karl Anthony Towns with all that Wiggs-Jimmy talk.
There's been plenty of that.
Yeah.
But generally, like, what you're saying is correct. Like, he's put it all together here. He's been in the proper role, and he's just been introduced to winning basketball. And, like, the playoffs have brought something out of him that we didn't know, and I don't know that he knew he had, but he clearly does.
It's probably John Krasinski's fault. He just didn't bring it out of him in Minnesota. You know what I mean? Like, John, we know he's a legend, but John should have done better.
Those Tuesday Wolves Magic games in mid-January when the Wolves are 13-29, and he just wasn't up for those games.
True story. I've never seen more joy, even tonight, out of Andrew Wiggins than when Andrew saw John Krasinski walking through the casino of the win during Summer League and seeing our guy JK. So for what it's worth, the listeners, if you don't know John, go read him. He's a legend in Minnesota. Covered Andrew early on. But Wiggins has been – he's beyond an X factor. So whatever's between X factor and finals MVP, because he is not the finals MVP, extremely important.
All right, Jay. We had a slight debate in the press room. Somebody asked me, they're like, you think we're coming back to Chase on Sunday? And I was like, yeah. I was even saying that before the game. At this point, I picked Warriors in seven. Before the series, I'd say Warriors in seven. Now, I'm kind of thinking the home teams are going to win out here. I mean, we'll see. Again, what I love about the series is I go into pretty much every game not really knowing what's going to happen. It's very good for the sport. But you, Jay, sounded like you thought it might not. You thought it might end in game six in Boston. Just do you feel like there's just something like that? It's a spook team right now?
Yeah, I just feel like the Celtics offensively just haven't had it for the last two games, and especially the last two fourth quarters, when it's come to winning time, they've just kind of tripped all over themselves. They went over the first 8 minutes of game five, they scored 5 points. Over the last 7:32 of game four, they scored 6 points. Like, that's disgusting. That's pathetic. That's tough to come back from. And the Celtics have been super resilient. This was the first time they lost two in a row, all playoff run. They could certainly go back to Boston in game six, but I just feel like the Warriors sense a little bit, like they're leaning on him a little bit. Like Draymond with 4.5 minutes left when he's in Tatum's face walking back to the Celtics huddle with him.
And not only was he walking back, it looked like he told Gary Payton, like, come on, let's keep going over there. And Gary was like, okay, I guess we're following Jason Tatum into the huddle right now. But it was clearly like Jason Tatum had just went 0-for-2 at the free throw line.
Aaron Gordon over there.
Well, I mean, it's a similar thing he's doing. You know, that's what first round he felt early like, ooh, Aaron Gordon is like, I can take him mentally out of the game. And this is the type of stuff we know Draymond's physical limitations. We've seen him in this series. He knows where he believes he can make impacts. And like that's
he's not good for the opponent's mental health. In this era of mental health, he's not good for that.
And he was great today too. Draymond, he was from the start just super sharp defensively. Like part of Jaylen Brown's struggles, Jaylen Brown had a really rough first half. Part of his struggles were just that Draymond met him at the rim time after time, and he was forcing stuff, and you can't force stuff against Draymond because he's going to be right there. But I just felt like that huddle thing, whatever you want to call it, it was just Draymond, we sense weakness right now. I sort of smell blood in the water in this Celtics team. I'm going to irritate them. I'm going to try to get in their head a little more right now.
So if the Warriors win this thing, in terms of like the petty meter, like there's going to be some sound bites. You know what I mean? Like there is, I feel like the animosity between these two teams is there for all to see, but they're not all verbalizing it. I mean, Draymond is going to have things to say, whether it's about the Grant Williams subplot or it's funny because he's tight with some of these guys from Team USA, but I do love the finals being the finals.
Tatum was on his podcast like a month and a half ago or something. You
see that stuff kind of like fall by the wayside though.
The reason why I'm going to say yes is because I've covered every single minute of that Memphis series where it was even nastier than this, to be honest with you. Obviously, you had the Dylan Brooks foul and Gary Payton that just like sent everything off the rails for a while. And they, not only after the series were they all, both sides very complimentary of each other and like, you know, basically like they're next up. I mean, you were there. I know you had the Dylan Brooks conversation where it was kind of like they're old. Like that was maybe like the...
No, that was in the presser. It was Steph. I brought that to Steph.
Yeah. But generally... And you were there for the closeout game. It was mostly, you know, nice, messaging back and forth, including Draymond came up and said, oh, man, I plan to do the gritty tonight post game and, you know, come up here and do a whoop that trick thing, and which was another storyline in the series. But he's like, love and respect for a hard-fought series. So I know what you're saying, but I also could see both sides being like, you know, much respect, hopefully to see them next year type thing.
And I feel like, the Celtics, they kind of went through not the same type of series, but similar stuff with the Heat, with the Bucks, where it was just super physical, guys getting into it. And both of those, they left it being like, yeah, we really respect those guys. And I think like that's who the Celtics want to be, is that tough physical team that gets in your head, that rattles you. And so if the Warriors are able to do that to them, I think they'll just kind of tip the cap and say, yeah, like, good work, guys.
Well, you see who was like the loudest, who fought back against Draymond as he came over the huddle. Marcus Smart was the first guy, like, you know, basically get out of here because he wants to be Draymond. So I do. And I feel like you felt mutual respect between those two in the series. There was one other thing. I don't know how much traction it is or isn't getting online, but did you guys see there was a Wired segment post game with Steve Kerr in the locker room saying, like, we're going to go win this in Boston. Let's go win it. That's where we're winning it. I don't know.
No, and I think that's interesting because I actually told Draymond yesterday that, like, you know, I enjoy his pod, but he has added minutes to my day because now listening to his pod is part of my job. And on his pod after game four, what I thought was interesting is that he kind of admitted that, like, in terms of the way players look at a series, that if you get game five, like, that's preferable because then you got that buffer. And that's always a trip to me to kind of process that idea that you go into game six being happy you have the buffer, but you can't compete as if you have the buffer. You know, like that is going to be their challenge for this game, is because they've been there before. I mean, if it's got 2015 vibes, then they get the job done. They celebrate in the opponent's city, you know, find a Morton Steakhouse somewhere.
They would like to win in Boston.
I agree. Where are they going, by the way? Not to give the fans the out, but like,
number one, I do not know yet. Number two, I probably wouldn't put it out to the Boston crowd if I did. I'm not sure how happy they hit.
Ray Ritter wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
You have another podcast guest like waiting for you 20 feet away. You are... Absolutely.
That's a podcast host. Give him some respect.
So Tim Kawakami is waiting in the wings. By the way, we could bring him into the end of our podcast.
He's not even rehabbing his pickleball injury. He's just standing still. All right.
But yes, and you guys probably want to get out of here late at night. Let's just quickly one more either thing from tonight or
predictions.
It could be a prediction. Suns in four. Amy's feeling real good, like Bart Simpson with the skateboards, and he's battling the Suns fans out in the desert heat again. Just anything from the series, from tonight, from what, or something you expect in six.
I'm just happy that Dave Portnoy wasn't at the game. That's all I got to say.
Well, that's his one. Jay-Z was, by the way.
Jay-Z was. I think Jordan Poole is going to have a big game six. I don't know why. I'm just feeling a Jordan Poole game six. On the road, even.
It wouldn't be stunning. I actually had a couple people internally predict a big Jordan Poole game five. I wouldn't categorize it as big. It was up and down. He is somewhat of a roller coaster.
14 minutes, yeah.
Score 14 points, as you mentioned earlier. Psycho. How about the Klay Thompson aspect of game six? Because there's two parts of this. Number one, the legend could potentially grow. But number two, he is going to be thirsty, I think, early in game six. Like, it is something he is going to be going in the game like, summon it.
This wasn't like...
I feel like he's already summoned it. Like, he's
not full game six.
No,
but he might take nine shots in the first quarter.
Let's be honest. He hasn't been at that same level that he was then after the injury. And for him to have the fourth quarter defensively that he did in game four and then come back in game five and do the similar stuff defensively throughout the whole game, but also hit so many key shots for that. I feel like he's already summoned it. And even if he doesn't have the 39, 45 point type night, like, he's just showed the competitive fabric that has made him, on top of all the shooting, like, just the competitiveness and the will that guy has is incredible.
Well, my favorite part is Bill Walton has somehow channeled himself through Klay Thompson, because his Age of Enlightenment post-game press conferences where he talks about the ocean. Like, I'm waiting for him.
He always loves those questions. Like, thank you for asking me about the ocean.
Like, he's going to post videos of, like, you know, like swimming with manta rays or something very soon. But by the way, true story, confessional time. After one of the pressers, no offense, Wiggins, other people were riding Wiggins tonight, so I did not need to listen to Andrew. I might have waited in the hallway for a ridiculous amount of time trying to catch Klay Slater so that I could show him the video of you and I taking the boat to game 3 and 4, because I thought he would appreciate that, you know, we too were being healed by the ocean. And
I'm going to guess he didn't care.
He wasn't there. I didn't get him. He never came out. He would care. You don't think he'd care?
Well, tell him before game six. Tell him at a media day on Wednesday. Let me know.
Deep and totally off topic, man. I'm a scuba diver. Like, he is 100% correct about the ocean.
Perfect place to end this. We will talk to you again, maybe from the ferry boat in Boston. That's where we're going, back to Boston, and we will talk to you from there.